Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to live your life by design in 2009? Well, then sit back, relax, and enjoy an empowering conversation to advance and enhance your life. And now, your host, Ms. Kathy Holloway Hill and Mr. Tony Lamont.
Good afternoon, good evening. How is everyone doing? I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And you're listening to the Living by Design radio show. We are so excited to be spending the next 60 minutes with you. And can you believe it, Tony? We are in week 9. We are in week 9 of our Review, Renew, and Reclaim Your Life series.
Yeah, and the series has gone very well. I've been really impressed with your ability to put together some not only great folks that have brought some tremendous information and talents to the table for the listeners, but also put together a great package for those listeners. So it's exciting, I know, for me as co-host of the show to be able to see what the folks get an opportunity to partake in.
Well, thank you. I am really excited about it because you listeners have such a treat in store. We are going to be doing this launch on December the 10th, and I tell you, we have some fantastic bonus gifts for you that you are just not going to believe. Me, Kathy Holloway Hill, myself, I am offering a fantastic package. It's going to be a 3-month coaching package with me. And you know what? I'm going to do something really crazy, Tony. I'm not going to even do a drawing. I'm going to say the first 25 people that actually purchase a copy of the book, you're going to get this fantastic package. One of the pieces in the package is a 3-month coaching session with me, and there are some other nice little surprises too. So you just have to stay tuned to find out what else is involved because we have fantastic resources to go along with emotional bailout, and all of my partners have great resources that are really going to enhance your life. You are going to be able to really do it up well in 2010. You're going to have my book and so many other resources to help you in the areas of self, health, and wealth, everything you need to transform your life. So I am so excited about it. Tony's excited about it. We're both excited. And that just brings me to our next guest, who's also one of my partners. And I've had Joanne on before, and she's a wonderful individual. She's a personal trainer for emotional fitness, and I absolutely love that phrase. I love emotional fitness, awareness coach, and an author and a speaker. So I'm going to just go ahead and bring Joanne on the line because I'm really anxious to get her on here so we can start talking. Joanne, are you here?
I'm here, Kathy. Hi. Hi, Tony.
Hi there. Good to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Yes, thank you for having me on again.
Yes, 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 you did such a great job the last time, and I'm just so excited that you're partnering with me for this campaign. So,
congratulations, it's just going to be a wonderful, wonderful launch into 2010, like you said, and I'm so excited
right.
for you and have your book come out.
Right, absolutely, and to have such a nice package for our listeners and our readers, just you know, we're really living in some difficult times, Joanne, as you know. And people are, you know, a lot of new clients and a lot of people are coming to me saying, oh, I can't afford to pay your fee and things. And you know, I just have such a big heart and I just really want to help people. And that's one of the reasons I want to do this campaign is to give away some things free and to give everyone an opportunity to just really have the resources they need because the job situation and the financial situation and all these things are they're struggling with. And I know you're going to give us some great tools and tips and techniques. That's a tongue twister. Tonight, because you were on before and you made such an impact. So I'm going to go ahead and let you kind of take the floor and kind of give our listeners a little bit of insight as to, you know, the ones that missed you the last time as to what you do.
Okay. Well, basically, what you just talked about and everything going on with us with, you know, the fears of job losses and financial issues, et cetera. And my focus is to help the kids have a voice for the parents, to for them to understand how, the toll it takes on them and how we take it out on them, unfortunately, unconsciously, actually. And so I inspire parents to get connected more physically, emotionally, and spiritually with their children. And physically, it's with all these things going on in our lives, we're not really present with our kids, and our kids feel that. We feel it when other people aren't present with us. So it's to get our stuff out of the way so we can really be there, so they can feel us there with our hearts and not so in our heads and in our fears about all the stuff, the adult stuff we have going on. We'll also get triggered by them, too, if we're in that space. So it's to take care of ourselves emotionally so we don't lash out from our stress, from our frustrations, what have you, because they are going to energetically pick up on that and behave mm-hmm. accordingly. So their behavior is, you know, it's going to test us. Okay, how connected are we? How centered are we? Can we not, you know, lash out when they're having felt the frustration that's actually within us acting up? So it's to balance that. And then also our spiritual connection, because I think that in and of itself can help us so much in these times to reconnect back to that place, to trust, to understand that, you know, what's beating our heart and what's making our hair grow every day, no matter what faith, religion, whatever you believe, it's about the bigger picture and understanding that something is making all this work, and that same something also flows through our kids, and they're actually closer, more closely connected to it, and they're here to remind us to get back to it. So that's the other part that that I do inspire in parents as well.
That's excellent, because we know that I did a seminar in Indianapolis a few weeks ago, and it was called Motherhood, Money, and Men, because we know parenting can be very difficult, especially when you're parenting preteens and teenagers and you know, those formative years.
Well, I'd like to change the societal view of that, to be honest, because I am a mother of two kids, of two teenagers, actually. And because I was able to make the shift, and my website is called theparentingshift.com, it's to make it easier. All these things that I've learned for myself and that I inspire, whether it's I write or I coach people or do programs like this or whatever it may be, or my audio program, which I've included in part of your package, is to inspire people to find that place that I've found that really parenting is not as hard as we make it to be. It really doesn't have to be that way. But it's us that needs to shift.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I absolutely think it has a lot to do with mindset and beliefs. Because when we think about how we were raised, I mean, when we look back on our own childhood, there was something back there that was a little bit dysfunctional. And children are so impressionable. They're
mm-hmm.
so impressionable. And that's
no,
why
they are.
That's why I like bringing people like you on, so that you can Yeah, explain that process, and so that, you know, parents or potential new parents that are, you know, thinking about having a family,
mm-hmm.
they'll understand that.
Well, and it's to break that cycle. You know, it's just, you know, it's commonplace to just assume and just to think that every family is dysfunctional. It's pretty sad for us to think that way, but unfortunately, in the majority of cases, it's true. But it doesn't have to be that way, and for myself...
No.
The audio program that I created is called Breaking the Cycle, because it's about taking all the wonderful things that we've learned when we were a kid, but to really remember those things that we didn't like and to notice when we've become it, because we will. And it's
right.
just through osmosis. And so then we have to diligently take responsibility for the parts in us. For example, you know, can you imagine a household where there is no yelling, where we're not disappointed in our kids, where we... where it's easy, where there is a mutual respect and not a demand for it. That's the possibility. It's what I live, and it's what I can't describe it any other way, that it's just so easy and it's so much fun. And my kids, once I started to let go of control, and it's a process and you learn as you go, it gets easier and easier, but they are my constant reflection and reminder of what I still need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have so much fun. It's the best time, and I'm so grateful that I was able, you know, in my early 30s, you know, it's kind of when I asked, oh, there's got to be something more than this. My kids are 19 months apart, both, you know, in diapers, and that's when I started on my search. And I think that's where it begins. It's that spiritual search for something more, to be connected to your purpose, to find more meaning in life than just going through the rote motions of, you know, going to work, coming home, having to make money to put food on the table, and, you know, kids do your homework, and et cetera, and the whole treadmill of family life. And so I'm grateful that I was able to make that shift. So for parents who haven't become parents or who are just early, it's to, even though we might think we're not going to repeat some cycles, we all of a sudden we do. And so it's to catch ourselves and then to do something about it so we can do it differently for our kids, and then we can change the legacy of parenting within our family.
And you know, Joanne, I'm going to ask you a weird question, and this is just something that I've seen this cycle happen so many times, I mean, even within my own family, and I know there has to be something that you could say about it, and there are so many young women that have it in their heads and their minds, they want to have children for the wrong reason. You know, because they lack internal love, or they want something of their own, or they just want to be a parent. Maybe there are media or society pressures, or, you know, you ought to have children. And maybe everybody is not cut out to be a parent, or maybe you're not mentally equipped or mature enough to be a parent. For instance, I never had biological children of my own, but I raised my niece because my sister died at a very young age. So I raised my niece. Now, I could have been selfish and said, you know, I want a child of my own. I don't really want to do that. I want a child. But I did what God wanted me to do. I walked the path that God placed in my life. And can you talk about what is it about these young girls or young people that feel like having children is what you're supposed to do, whether they're prepared to be good parents or not?
Well, I think you did speak to it just a few minutes ago, that they're trying to fill that void of the lack of self-love that they have within themselves. They're needing that to fulfill themselves somehow. But on the other hand, too, I do believe that it's not in our control. So if it's God's plan for them to have a child young, there's a reason for that, and to trust in that. For their journey, because it's their own individual journey. So if it's meant to happen, it's going to happen. That's where, in my belief, where it comes from. But I do think that there's, you know, whether it's peer pressure, even, you know, with boyfriends and all these kids having sex at a younger age, it's,
right.
You know, not feeling good about themselves and needing to fill that void. They want to feel that love that they actually were born with. Every single child, every single one of us as babies, is born perfectly, unconditionally loving.
Right.
But that connection, just like ours gets disconnected, we stop loving ourselves unconditionally, theirs does too, by when we raise them, if we love them conditionally, which a lot of us do, not even knowing that we're doing it. You know, I'll love you when you're good, but when you're bad, I'm going to punish you. So that's not loving unconditionally.
Right.
So
Joanne, I wanted to ask this because here's something, and it's so interesting because I was in a conversation with a colleague of mine, and he has a young child, and he's been married for a couple of years now, and the nurturing aspect of the parenting skills are different from the husband and wife. They have different kind of nurturing and different kind of parenting skills. One is more nurturing than the other. One is more attentive than the other. And as I tried to explain to him, he is the one that's more nurturing because it was a preference for him. He wants a large family, and his wife doesn't really know how many kids he wants or even if she wanted the child that they have. So there's that thing going on. And when it comes to what we went through as children, I explained to him, I said, well, you have to take a look at how she's felt about her childhood and the things that she got out of that childhood and why she's not being able to nurture the way that you do. Because he's trying to, as you said, break the cycle, because there were things that went on in his life that he wasn't happy with. So what he did, he's made a conscious effort every day to be different than his father and his mother were to him. Whereas his wife is doing pretty much exactly the same thing that her mother and father did to her. So what kind of advice can you give to maybe a couple or people that are in that similar situation? Because they need to break the cycle and deliver their own kind of nurturing, their own kind of parenting, but it's a difficult situation because they're in it together, but they're kind of apart in their nurturing and their abilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are all going to have different skills that we bring into our role as a parent, like you said, based on our own history, but mm-hmm. also as co-parents, as I'm assuming they're living together and they're married or not, but they're together.
Then
what it sounds like to me is there's a bit of a disconnection within the relationship between the two of them to be able to get to the place where they can discuss this and share, for the man to share his concerns, not making her wrong for it, but inspire her, to talk about it. You know, a lot of us in relationships and even with our children, we don't really learn great communication skills. So probably the best suggestion, although I can never tell anyone what to do, but I think to have that same nurturing and openness that this man is trying to create with his child, it's in him so he can also be that for his wife. And to, mm-hmm. to encourage her then to open up. And she might not be at the same space yet of forgiveness or letting go of what's happened to her. And so, but as she can share her emotional pain with him in a safe place, so he can create that safe place within the relationship for her to get her stuff out that is blocking her perhaps from being able to open her heart to the same place where he is. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. And I'm glad you said it, because I gave him similar kind of advice. One thing that I did also mention to him, because he is so nurturing and he is the one that does pretty much he's taken on the women's, traditional women's role in the relationship as far as taking care of the child. And she doesn't do a lot of that. So it's always, go to your daddy, ask your daddy for this, your daddy will help you with this, change all those kinds of things. And what I mentioned to him was, one thing you may want to be careful of, even though you've taken on that role and you feel like someone has to do it, you're not giving her an opportunity to be what she could be.
Because, and bond with the child.
Right. You've basically kind of put yourself in her position and you've given her some examples, so the two of you need to have a discussion. So I'm glad you said it that way, because that's pretty much the same advice I gave him. That it definitely needed to be communicated, that they need to share the conversation with one another and decide, this is what we're going to do, and I won't do this, and I won't do that. I'll allow you to do this, and you'll please allow me to do this, and we're in it together instead of butting heads and fighting over who's doing one thing or the other. And I particularly like the fact that you did say that, there was probably something else going on in the relationship, because I said the same thing. I told him that. It was much more than just I've got to pick her up when you told me you were going to, or that kind of thing. So there were more things there. So there was some animosity for some reason, and once they got to that point, they probably could have a better cohesive parenting unit, and they would be able to work together instead of working against each other, trying to have a contest on who is the better or not parent. So yeah.
Yeah, they're both doing the best they know how to do with the frame of reference from where they've come. So,
right.
And for him to know that too, that she's not doing it wrong, that she to support and to believe in her, that she's doing the best she knows how to do at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would also add to that, just for everyone who's listening, that was a great example, Tony. Thanks for that. But, before you come together with your partner, I mean, of course you're going to, I would think you're going to discuss these things when you're, before you're married, because you would think people would discuss, you know, parenting, how we're going to raise our children, and different aspects of your life that are very important, and parenting is one of them, before you come together as partners, because that's an important topic. So if you have individual issues that haven't been addressed, that's one thing that you need to get worked out before you, you know, engage into the marriage thing. I mean, because having children is huge. You're bringing another life into the world.
Oh, yeah, and you're absolutely right. And they did do that. They actually had the discussion, the conversation. They went through all of those different things. And I asked them and said the same thing to them. And I think the thing that really was surprising to me was he really pushed, and she was supportive, and was that supportive helpmate. And I guess decided, okay, this is something my husband really wants, and I will do this and give him this. But I think there was, as I mentioned to him, I think there were some things that she really was not ready for, and she didn't want to express that, and it's now coming out now that the child is here.
She may not have even known that she wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Communication is so important.
Very important. In every aspect of our
relationship. But we don't know how to speak. We don't know how to speak our truth for fear of maybe hurting somebody or disappointing somebody else. And that brings up a good point, because most children feel that way, that there's not an open communication, because we don't even know how to really communicate ourselves as adults. So how do we teach them how to communicate with us, to share themselves, to be vulnerable, to share their feelings without the fear of us perhaps getting mad or being disappointed or not agreeing? We don't allow them to have a voice.
That's what we learn.
And one of the things that I talk about in my seminar is how important it is, because children are born with a natural innate instinct to explore and discover. Because they want to know, what is this thing called life? And what is, you know, they're touching and they're, you know, just exploring. And we as caregivers and parents, you know, we're always saying, stop, quit, don't do that. And we're trying to take that instinct away from them whenever they're asked our little inquisitive questions. We should be, and I know it gets annoying sometimes because, you know, adults have things to do. But we really have to take that into consideration, that they are new in this world, and everything we do and everything we say is being absorbed like a sponge. They are very observant.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, if we do our emotional fitness training, we won't get annoyed.
That's right.
We won't be annoyed. You guys are familiar with Wayne Dyer?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Wayne Dyer, he's one of my favorites, and he has this wonderful explanation that in our children in the womb, we carry them around for 9 months, and everything is looked after. You know, we're not in control of anything. It's all looked after. The nose gets put when it's supposed to get put. The nails grow. The eyes form. Everything is totally taken care of. And this beautiful little miracle 9 months later comes out, and we hold it and we look and gaze, and just you feel just your heart explode with all this love, and you give thanks. You know, thanks, God, great work, great job, just beautiful. We'll take over from here. And that's what we do. So if we can remember and get back to that place and allow and trust, you know, they know how to walk when they're going to walk. They know how to crawl. We don't teach them that. They've got everything inside of them, just like we did. But then we get disappointed or in competition. Oh, our child's not, you know, as good as the other one. He should be walking by now. We're disappointed because they're not speaking by now. We think there's something wrong. And instead of just trusting and allowing in this unique, beautiful child, is going to develop exactly how they're supposed to, if we could just let go and allow that to happen.
This is such, oh my goodness, Tony, you know, this is one of those topics where I'm really, really engaged, and I'm just so interested. I went to a Girl Scout support breakfast this morning because I love working with Girl Scouts and just young people, period, because that is the time when you can make such a big difference in a child's life when they're young and impressionable, and these things are so important. And that's why I love what you do, Joanne, that emotional fitness and the interconnection and the things that you have on your website and the programs that you have, because I know people do the best that they can do. I know we have to parent with what we come to the table with. But if we could just work on our own emotions and thought process and whatever we have, it could make such a difference in a child's life.
Absolutely. But I have compassion for all of the parents that I work with and that I hear from, et cetera, because I used to be that controlling, yelling mom. Until I did that shift. But really, to get to the place of getting connected to kindness, compassion, peace, to treat our kids with the same respect we would the bank teller when we go, the stranger whom we don't know, quite often we don't behave quite the same way at home. Is to really just be, that's why awareness coach was the best word I found I could use for myself, because I just help people become aware of what it is that they're doing and what it is they're teaching their kids. And they haven't got a clue, nor did I, when I used to remake my daughter's bed when she was 3 or 4 years old, teaching her that what she did wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
When she, that thinking she wouldn't notice, or teaching my children that if you get angry and mad, that's how you get your own way. So when they have a temper tantrum, that's why we teach them to have temper tantrums, because mommy and daddy get their way when they get mad. That's what we're supposed to do.
Joanne, I don't know a lot of good role model parents, but I do know one that I can say I have consistently seen this individual be extremely patient. Even more so than I think I wouldn't have as much patience as this individual. And I have to go ahead and give a shout out and props to Tony Lamont, because he is the most patient parent I have ever seen in my life.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yay, Tony. I'm curious. He's had a lot of things thrown at him. I've seen a lot of things thrown at him. How old is your youngest?
My youngest is 15.
Yeah, see? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my oldest is 30. And yeah, yeah. 15 is a great age.
girl or boy?
Girl. I have all girls. 30, 20, 27, and 15.
Yeah. And Joanne, I have to say, he does a fabulous job. Just patient and... even when I know he probably wants to say, okay, leave me alone, I've never seen it. All I can go by is what I've observed. I've been around Tony a few times, and the times I've seen it, he's been very patient, and he takes the time to explain why or why not, and, how this can affect your life, and these are things you have to think about now, before you become an adult. And I'm just observing, and I'm like, oh, he is so good with that.
Well, and I'll share this. I think that the principles of change and trying to allow it to be different, because the one thing I do remember, many of us who are baby boomers grew up, particularly in the African American community, and a lot of other communities, but discipline was a different kind of discipline than it is now. And right. So growing up, I always joke and say my mother was not an abuser. She was a disciplinarian. I was a very active child, so she disciplined me quite often, but not in an abusive way. But she would be in jail now if it was this day and age because of the things that she did. But the thing about it is I also remember some of those things that were done. And I've decided, and I'm a grandfather, so I also deal with my grandchildren quite a bit. And I don't interfere or intercede with their parents and their parenting But when I get an opportunity to be around my grandchildren, not only do I work in cooperation with my daughters, but I also and their children's fathers, but I also give them the same kind of nurturing I wish I would have had. So realizing you don't always have to be yelled at, you don't always have to be hit, you don't have to go through all those kinds of things. I'll take my grandson and I'll pull him to the side and explain to him why he should have responded differently and why there is this expectation of being a better him than my expectation of what I think he should have done and his reaction. And I always ask him, and he's only three, but I ask him, okay, do you understand what Papa is saying? And do you understand? And he'll say yes. And then I'll ask him to repeat it. And I find now that he's emulating some of those behaviors. He'll say, well, I'm not supposed to do this because it's going to do this to me, or this may happen, and those kinds of things. And he understands it's for his protection and things like that.
And Tony, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but, you know, we are running out of time here. And
oops.
Joanne, I am so pleased that you joined us this evening. We do have another guest that we're going to bring on, but I want to thank you ever so kindly for all of your wisdom and your input. And, I mean, you have just been a tremendous talent. I mean, I knew you would be because you've been on my show before, so.
Oh, well, Kathy, thank you so much. I'm tweeting now. So
I want you to give our listeners your website just to make sure we get that in.
Yep, it's theparentingshift.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. My address is @aware, the letter N, connected, aware and connected.
Excellent, excellent. And, of course, you can always email me, Kathy@cholowayhill.com, to get Joanne's contact information. So thank you again ever so kindly. You have been wonderful, wonderful.
Oh, thank you to you too, Kathy. And I'll be looking forward to the launch on the 10th. And it was great to chat again with you too, Tony.
You too.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Okay.
Now, moving on, we are going to bring Peggy Collins on the line. Peggy's a professional speaker trainer, and her book, I love the title of her book, Help is Not a Four-Letter Word, Why Doing It All is Doing You. I hope I'm saying that right, because I'm going to go ahead and bring Peggy. Are you there?
I'm here, Kathy.
Did I say that right? Is that the title of your book?
Yes. Help is Not a Four-Letter Word, Why Doing It All is Doing You In.
It was doing you in. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I knew I left something out. That's right, that's right. Why doing it all is doing you in. That
right.
is nice. I love that. I love that. Well, welcome to the show, Peggy. I am so happy to have you in my partnership.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You are doing some wonderful things. So go ahead and explain to our listeners what you're working on and what you do and who is Peggy Collins.
Well, I'm a professional speaker. I've been speaking professionally since 1993. And before the book was published in 2007 by McGraw-Hill, I spoke on sales subjects, Kathy, because I came out of a career in sales and marketing. So I spoke on things like the science of networking, the art of connection, marketing yourself inside and out, and all sorts of good things like that. But I have to say that since 2007, I've spoken almost exclusively on my book because this has become a mission.
I love the title. Now,
thanks.
Can you tell us what it's about? What is the focus? I mean, I can guess, but I don't want to guess. I want you to tell us.
Well, the book actually is about my own personal experience, and let me right here at the top say that I'm not a psychologist. As a matter of fact, McGraw-Hill made this contingent upon a psychologist writing the foreword and saying grace over this because I've identified an extreme self-defeating behavior that nobody's ever talked about before, and I call it the self-sufficiency syndrome. And classically, it's, and your audience may recognize this, it's about people who can't ask for help. Can't delegate because nobody else can do it as well as they can. And so they end up doing everything all by themselves. And, of course, down the line comes burnout.
Yep, exactly.
Sound familiar?
Yes. Yep. That's very interesting.
I like that. I have found that it's an epidemic. I primarily target women's groups, Kathy, women's conferences and association conferences across the U.S., and I can tell you in the last 2 years I've discovered it's entirely an epidemic.
I believe it. I can believe. As a matter of fact, that used to be me. That used to be me, Peggy, because I was in corporate America for 28 years, okay?
Yes.
And a large majority of that time was in management. And when I was a new manager, I think of those 28 years, I probably was in management probably 20 of those years. But when I first became a new manager, I had no clue about how to delegate. I was such a perfectionist,
Yes.
That I wanted it done exactly a specific way, and I just didn't trust my employees to do it.
Right. Oh, I understand. I really, I have had that journey as well. So what happened? How did you finally learn how to ask for help?
I think you stated it very, you stated it very well when you said burnout, because after a few trips to the emergency room, I learned that I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah. And you know what? The question begs to be asked, and I'm not the interviewer, but did you drive yourself to the emergency room?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? There were a couple times, no, I did not. There were a couple times that the EMS was called from work.
Right.
From work. I went straight from work in the EMS emergency vehicle over to the emergency room. And there were a few times, this happened several times, and there were a few times I drove myself. But, yeah, EMS, I drove myself. So after several times of that happening, I was thinking, God, if you please let me come through this, I am going to change the way I do things at this place.
See, I had exactly the same story. I was an executive and traveling too much of the time with two small children, and then all of a sudden I was managing my parents' health care, and all of a sudden I was sitting at my desk one day, and I didn't know what it was, but what I was having was a panic attack. I thought I was having a heart attack.
Oh, yeah, I've had those.
Oh, and I talk to so many women, Kathy, who are, after my speech, they come up and they say, oh, I'm so glad you talked about panic attacks because I have those, but the doctor gave me a pill.
I know. Yes, I've been given that dreaded pill, and I hate it.
Well, and this was my wake-up call, and I just hate it so much that it was not theirs. You know, I know that it's going to take something even more dreadful to be their wake-up call.
Well, I mean, you know, you can take a pill, and a pill will calm you down, but are you going to live on that pill for the rest of your life?
Exactly.
Or are you going to learn the right techniques to control the situation and learn to delegate or learn to do whatever it takes to not drive yourself crazy?
Exactly. And are you ever going to really give people the opportunity to see the real you? Because you're
And not only that, but I learned in corporate America, and of course I brought all this knowledge out and I started my own company, but you're also not giving your employees an opportunity to grow. I mean, when you delegate to them, that gives them a chance to show their talents and use their skills. I mean, you spend all this money in corporate America developing these people.
I know it.
And then you do it all yourself.
That's a manager's job, isn't it?
Yep.
I have a quick story for you that you'll really appreciate. While I was writing the book, I had a woman, I won't even identify the company. She was so high level that somebody would recognize the company. But she had over 1,000 people that reported to her. And, of course, they reported to her through various levels of management. But
she said
that she was so self-sufficient. She was so unhappy. She didn't know what it was. She just knew she was miserable. And she said everybody called her the frozen lady, because they never, ever saw her show an emotion. And she was having a huge meeting on 9/11, and somebody handed her a note and told her that the Twin Towers had gone down. And she began to cry. And she said people flocked to her saying, we didn't know you were real. And she said from that moment on, her life changed.
Hmm.
Isn't that a great story?
That is. I'm sorry she, well, I'm glad that she didn't have to make a trip to the emergency room.
Well, me
I mean,
too.
I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but at least she had her wake-up call from observing, you know, a devastating event, and it just moved her emotionally. So, you know,
right.
I would rather get the wake-up call that way than go to the emergency room.
Well, I would, too, and speaking of emergency rooms, when I'm speaking, about midway through my keynote, I ask, how many of you in this audience, like myself, have driven yourself to the emergency room? And, of course, you would be amazed at the number of hands that go up. And I was in Lexington, Kentucky about this time last year, and I will never, ever forget what a woman that was closest to me said. Kathy, I had to ask her twice. I thought I'd misunderstood her. She said, yes, with Clorox in one eye. Now, if you want to have fun, close your eye or hold your hand over your eye and envision yourself driving yourself to the emergency room that way.
Oh my God! How did that happen?
That's really an extreme, isn't it?
That is. My goodness.
But lots of hands go up because I call us self-sufficient. Mm. And so when I ask self-sufficients to raise their hands, they're always a lot. Whether I'm asking them whether they're driving themselves to the emergency room or they're getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to bake the cookies for the child's party the next day, and so forth and so on. You know, there are a lot of us.
Well, I know I had to learn a lot. I guess this is my night to give my co-host a lot of shout-outs. But I know my co-host, Tony, has really helped me because when I started my company, I was so corporately structured. And Tony's been in the media broadcasting industry for, 25? How long, Tony?
Ever.
Well, it's been long, but he had to actually help me with that corporate structure thing because, I mean, even though I had learned from those emergency room visits, I still had quite a bit of very strict structure to the way I would function and operate, and I just really had to, you know, I was so far to the left, I had to come to the middle. It was still
right.
Too much. Hey,
right,
it
takes some time, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes,
Now, one question I want to ask, because I know a lot of people, and it's kind of societal in so many ways. I mean, we get it in many instances from families in our family structure and dependability, but we also, from a societal standpoint, there is that attitude that I need to be self-sufficient because that's what many of the businesses and the organizations want you to be, because relying on other folks doesn't show a sense of ability. I mean, it's, we need for you to do this, and we don't really need for you. I mean, if you're a manager, it's a different situation, but if you're a subordinate or an employee or just a worker, as a lot of folks call them, what happens a lot of times is your boss has this attitude, this is what I want you to do, and this is what I need for you to be. And that puts folks in a mindset throughout the other aspects of their life, this is how I have to be. How do you offset that kind of mentality that we're really bombarded with in the workplace? Because that's what, even in my business, I mean, I'm a broadcaster and I have the opportunity to be more of a personality on the air, but there is a structure and there is a sense of self-sufficiency and there is an expectation of that. And you really don't have an opportunity to do a lot of delegations because this is what I expect you to do. And if you try to hand it off to someone else, then it's going to show that you're not really doing what what my expectations for you are. And so you're always in a quandary of, okay, what am I supposed to do? And that's why people end up going to the hospital and not knowing. So what are some of the first things that we can do emotionally to say, you know what, even though this is being put in my face and I'm being put in this place, this is what I need to do to make sure that I start changing my attitude?
Well, Tony, let me say this first before I suggest some things. I couldn't agree with you more. And let me just remind everybody that we're living in a culture that has taught us that it's a weakness to ask for help. Many mm-hmm. of us, as you said, were raised in homes where we were told, if you want it done right, do it yourself.
That's right.
You know, don't bother the neighbors. All of those kinds of messages. And so it's like water drip. You know, we grew up with that just resounding in our heads 24/7. And so we came into the workplace with that mentality in the first place. But to the point you made, do you know the thing I hear, and I, like Kathy, was in corporate America for a very long time until I started my own speaking business, but the thing that I heard in corporations the most when I was working with them as a consultant was job security. Everybody protects their own turf, their knowledge, because if they share that knowledge, they don't have job security. And that's the way they maintain it, is not to share. So it's coming from two sides, but I often think that I would love, when we're talking about the business world, I would love to canvas teamwork is so in, and I would love to canvas teams across the country and see how many self-sufficients are sitting on those teams. Because we all know that in order to be a good team member, you're going to collaborate. And you cannot be a self-sufficient and collaborate. They're opposite ends of the spectrum. And so I dare say that it's that old 20% rule. I personally think that probably we'd find that 20% of the people on that team are doing the work.
Yes, I totally agree, because I think the saying is it's always a handful of people that do everything for everybody.
Right, and you know, Tony, what if the other people were able to ask for help or able to have something explained? It's back to Kathy's point. You know, managers are supposed to develop people, but I think one of the first questions, to kind of get to your question, one of the first questions a manager should ask his employees are, can you ask for help? I think, if a culture, and let me back up and say this, if a culture recognizes what's happening to them, that they are full of people who cannot ask for help and as a result are stumbling and are not as productive because they don't feel like they can ask to have anything explained that they don't understand. And I've talked with people who've gone home and studied software for weeks on their own rather than ask somebody. So I can see it hitting the bottom line as I talk with people. But if a corporation understands that they've got many people, men and women, who cannot ask for help, and they make it safe, they start putting it on their performance appraisals and counting that as a strength, and they start giving people a score based on their ability to ask for help and giving them accolades for doing that, then people are going to start inching. It's not, as Kathy and I said, it's not an overnight thing, but they will start inching as they're given permission to start showing a little bit of vulnerability. There's a lot of fear there. Fear controls this entire self-sufficiency syndrome. And so there's a lot of fear there that has to be broken down over time. But a corporation making it safe is the first step.
And I want to add to that delegating thing, and Tony, I don't know if this may or may not address what you just commented about or your question, but when people try to protect their turf, as Peggy stated, you can look at it as job security, but there's another side to that. Yeah, it may be job security, but it also could possibly hold you back when a promotion comes open.
Exactly.
You know, because if you're the only person that knows how to do that because you haven't shared your knowledge, then you're going to get stuck in that spot.
I know it, and it's strange that people can't see that, but it plays into this cultural value we're talking about. You know, they can justify it based on the fact that they were raised that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed at how many people don't even question this. I was speaking, my church asked me to speak to an older group of women, a couple of months ago, and I don't think I'll ever forget this. There was a woman in her 80s after I finished my presentation that said, oh, you know, I've never even thought of this.
Mm.
She'd gone through her life being so self-sufficient And it just had never crossed her mind that perhaps that was not the correct way to be.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Isn't that amazing, Peggy? I mean, when you hear people say things like that at 80 years old, I mean, that just really reinforces to me that we are doing the right thing with the messages that we're giving, the knowledge that we're spreading, our wisdom. That just lets me know we're doing the right thing. I love doing it. I absolutely love doing it.
I do, too. I do, too.
And I can't believe there's so many people out there that still don't get it, but there are.
Well, and, you know, if I can add, too, the one thing that I'm noticing and I'm getting to about the self-sufficiency and the folks that don't ask for help, the one thing that I also realize is that when you take a look at those individuals to some degree, there is something emotionally about them that doesn't allow them to be outgoing. Maybe they're introverted to some degree. I mean, because I've worked with individuals like that who are definitely, and I love the term self-sufficient, because they have that attitude, one, no one can do it as good as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Two, if I share this information, it makes me more vulnerable. But the one thing I notice about them as a whole is they weren't very outgoing. I mean, yeah, in a social event, they were able to handle business and do what they needed to do. But in most cases, they would stand in the corner if they could. They didn't do a lot of social events. They didn't hang out or do any of those kinds of things. It was about just being to themselves and by themselves. They had a very small niche of individuals that they allowed close to them. And so I'm just wondering, is that a trait? Is it a tendency? Is it the norm? Is it something you definitely see? Or am I kind of off? Do we get both sides? Do we get people that are very outgoing and this happens? Or is that just a trend?
We do. We get them on both sides, Tony. And I've seen what you're talking about. And I think perhaps personality fits into that too. Perhaps shyness to begin with. But I see highly extrovertish people in the same category. Let me explain it this way, and I think it breaks it down. In the book, I talk about three different layers of people who fit this pattern. And the first one are the inheritors, and that's what we've been talking about, people who have inherited this message that it's a weakness to ask for help. The second layer are what I call islanders. These all begin with I. The islanders are people like consultants. Certainly, I would be eligible as a professional speaker. People who telecommute, and of course, you know how much bigger that's getting. Where it's almost like what came first, the chicken or the egg? They need to be self-sufficient because they're on their own, or they become more self-sufficient because of that, or maybe they were self-sufficient to begin with. And then the third category is the very largest, and that's what I call the icons. And icons are people we really look up to, like that manager that I was talking about who broke down after 9/11. Everyone looked up to her, even though they may not have felt they knew her because she was such a high-level executive. But the icons are people not that we look up to, but that are conning themselves. And these are the people who come from backgrounds, and I think I'm including most of us when I say this. They've come from beginnings, and I'm not throwing darts, where they did not learn to trust. Mm. You know, I'm going to talk in a minute, I hope, about the three stages of development. And the first stage, of course, is dependence, when we have to depend on other people. But that is the stage where we are supposed to learn how to trust. And there are a whole lot of us who didn't. And so if you didn't learn to trust, then guess what? Our culture has handed you a wonderful place where you can hide out and be looked up to and respected being too self-sufficient. You see where I'm going with that, Tony?
Yep.
So, oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and so in that category, you get introverts and you get extroverts because they don't trust anybody. So they can be, like I said, they can be really admired for being so self-sufficient. And by being so, they don't have to trust anybody.
Mm-hmm. And I can definitely see the common denominator on both sides being the lack of trust. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is. Trust is a huge issue in this syndrome. It really is. Trust and fear. Because if you'll watch a self-sufficient, and of course I was one for so many years, so I was really speaking from my heart about this, but if you watch a self-sufficient, I don't care how going they are, they're separating themselves with their self-sufficiency. You know, they're not really showing you their vulnerability. They're building a little wall around themselves. In fact, let me go so far as to say, a self-sufficient defines themselves by their accomplishments.
Yeah.
I agree.
And so because of that, now, I have a lot, again, you know, I'm speaking to big women's groups. And by the way, Tony, just for you, I want to remind you that this is not a gender issue. I get asked that a lot, and I always say, remember that a man invented the GPS just so you guys would never have to ask for directions. So that
I like that. I like that. Yeah.
That kind of solves that problem, doesn't it? But, you know, women just spread themselves over more areas of responsibility.
Yep.
And so we burn out faster from it. That's the reason I'm addressing women. But when I say you gals are defining yourself by your accomplishments, some women get angry and say, you just don't know how many friends I have. And I said, this really has nothing to do with how many friends you have. This has to do with whether you're asking them for help and whether you're trading, receiving, and giving in that friendship. And when they're not, then they're defining themselves by their accomplishments. Because they're doing it all.
And that's typically a male trait. I mean, I don't mean to stereotype or anything, but as a norm.
It
typically is a male trait, yeah. Because women typically do define themselves by relationships.
They do. It's our natural, and oh boy, have you hit on a key thing, because that is our natural inclination.
Mm-hmm.
To define
and men
ourselves.
Define themselves by their accomplishments, their power, their, you know, where they are, their status.
Exactly, but a self-sufficient doesn't operate that way. We define ourselves by our accomplishments as well. And what I love to see happening, and I didn't write about this, but I'm working with women now on this, to see this huge shift that's taking place where women are going to be able to step up and own their own characteristics because collaboration is coming into the workplace.
I know, and I love it.
I love it. And men are going to have to learn how to collaborate and not be quite so competitive. And women who have followed men into the competitiveness are going to have to drop it and find themselves. Of course, this coming away from the self-sufficiency is a whole process. But learn to collaborate and finally, for the first time, Kathy, be able to embrace their own natural tendencies.
That's right. That's right. And Peggy, you know, I knew this was going to happen. This is a fabulous discussion, but we're coming up on our last 60 seconds, and
yeah,
I want to make sure we get your website in. So can you just go ahead and tell our listeners, what is your website?
I'll be glad to. It's www.helpisnotaforletterword.com, and four is spelled out.
Yeah, help is spelled out. Well, help is
Yeah, help is not out. A four spelled
four,
out, letter word, dot com.
And that's all one. Help is not a four-letter word, .com. So that's
right.
Very easy to remember. And if you want more information about Peggy, please feel free to email me, Kathy, at chollowayhill.com. So, Peggy, thank you so much. You have really, really, really given our listeners a lot to think about.
I'm so pleased to have been on the show. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to get the word out there.
Oh, no problem at all. And, of course, we're going to be working together on this campaign because it's going to be outstanding. So everyone, stay tuned for that. And we are going to sign off for now. Thank you guys for joining us. We're going to be back again next week with two more fabulous guests in our partnership. So please join us same time next week. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you both.